Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Black Hills Corporation is an energy company based in Rapid City. In February, Black Hills Corp acquired Source Gas in a $1.9 billion deal. The company now serves 1.2 million natural gas and electric utility customers in eight states, including South Dakota. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray sat down with Chairman and CEO David Emery to talk about consolidation in the energy industry and the responsibilities and challenges for companies like Black Hills Corp regarding renewable sources of energy for customers and for the climate.
Thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you here.
You bet. Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks.
Let me start by asking just a little bit about your background. You're from South Dakota, and really you're the head of one of the biggest companies in South Dakota now. It's a homegrown company. How did you come to be where you are?
It's a long story. Yeah. I mean, I was born here, actually. Lived in Hot Springs for a few years. Grew up in Custer, primarily. My background's in petroleum engineering, and that's actually how I started with Black Hills Corp. I worked for someplace else first, and then came to Black Hills in 1989 and kind of worked my way through oil and gas, coal, some involvement in energy marketing, eventually to the utility, and then to Black Hills Fibercom, our telecom subsidiary at the time, and then moved into this role in 2004.
Well, so you've been there for a little over 10 years.
26.
Oh, 26. Yeah, I mean, I guess in this current role.
Well, in this role, yeah. I've been there since January 2004, so 12.
You've seen a lot of fluctuations in the market. You've seen a lot of things happen when it comes to energy. And certainly it's a lot more happening in the future, it looks like. Any reflections on that, what you've seen in your career?
Well, I think from an industry perspective, probably the largest single thing, other than the fluctuations in technologies and prices and all of those things, which are obvious, is the consolidation of the industry. So on the electric utility side, when I became CEO, there was probably 130-plus investor-owned electric utilities. Now they number in the 60s. And two just got bought last week. So, you know, a lot of industry consolidation, very similar situations going on in the natural gas side of the business as well. So,
and that's what's happening right now with Black Hills
Corp.
You've recently acquired Source Gas, is that right?
And correct.
You've doubled your customer base, 1.2 million people. You serve customers as far west as Colorado, as far east as Arkansas. Why was this the right move for Black Hills Corp? I guess is this part of the move happening nationwide that you're talking about?
Well, yeah, it is. And, from our perspective, you go clear back to 2004. I mean, we were a very small investor-owned utility. We literally had 62,000 customers, which is really meters, not number of people. But 62,000 customers, most in South Dakota, a little bit of Wyoming and Montana. At the end of the year, we were at almost 800,000 in seven states. Now with Source Gas, we're at 1.2 million in 800 communities in eight states. It really is necessary to grow in order to survive. All the smaller companies are gone, literally. And so our business strategy for that whole decade plus a couple of years has been to really focus on growing our utilities, which is the part of our business that we believe we're the best at and very well equipped to continue to grow. So that's been our focus through that whole period of time. And making sure that we're performing very well for our shareholders, because the weaker companies were the ones that had a tendency to get bought out over that whole period of time.
You have to perform for shareholders. You also have to perform for customers
in
a market that is regulated and determined by groups like the Public Utilities Commission. Is that right? I mean,
the utility business is different in that we don't get to pick what we charge our customers, right? We have an obligation to serve everyone who can pay their bill, but we don't get to pick what we get to charge them. We usually go spend the money, build the facilities, build the lines, build the power plants, and then go ask permission to charge more in order to recover that. Any other business, if you want to charge more, you typically can. So it's unique in that regard. So, for us, it's a balance, obviously, every day between customer interests and shareholder interests. We try to take a very long-term approach to that and basically say, if we do a good job consistently taking care of our customers, really good service, good reliability, good customer service, we strive to be kind of in the top of our industry in everything we do. If we do that, results usually follow pretty well for the shareholders.
Are those the factors that have allowed Black Hills Corp to grow in the way that it has? What are the other factors that have let you, you know, be where you are today?
Yeah, I think the primary one is just, you know, the ability to grow is contingent on the ability to do it and do it successfully and profitably. And that takes several things. One, you have to be very good at buying and integrating properties together, consolidating the systems and the call centers and the software and all the other things that you have to do. I think we've got it down to a science now after going through this many, many times in 12 years. That's one. And then the other one is that you have to do it prudently, meaning you can't pay too much. Because if you put your company at risk by paying too much, then, you know, that's not going to work out long term either. So you have to be prudent, invest wisely, but invest enough to get the deal done and be comfortable that you can integrate it and operate it profitably and still provide the good customer service. Otherwise, it's not sustainable over the long period of time.
And you paid $1.9 billion for source gas? Obviously,
you
thought that was a good deal.
$1.9 billion for source gas. It was a very expensive deal. I mean, it really was. But source gas was unique in that we'd been looking at it for over 5 years. And we'd tried a private approach to the two separate owners several different times. We could never get both of them to agree to sell at the same time for the same price. And finally, they decided that they were both willing to sell, and that's when we were successful. But at the time that occurred, of course, the market for utilities got a lot more expensive. And so we had to pay a pretty premium price to do it. But we knew, because we already operated in three of the four states, and we were very, very familiar with their operations because we'd been looking at them for so long, that we knew we could pay that, still end up with a great result for customers and shareholders both. But it's an aggressive purchase price, there's no doubt about it.
There are those who say the utility energy industry, the energy industry, is facing some pretty rough seas ahead, when given the volatility in oil, gas, and coal markets, given the potential more regulations when it comes to climate change and other things. How do you navigate the future when you look at those things? There are a lot of people who say they wouldn't even want to be in this industry because of the difficulties that may be ahead.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of challenges with being in the industry now. You know, the magnitude and complexity of regulation alone has gotten pretty dramatic over the last few years. But a lot of the regulation pertaining to air emissions and all that stuff has changed a lot in the last decade in particular. You know, we feel like we have a really good long-range planning process, and to the best of our ability, we make sure we're comfortable with the changes that are going to come along, and generation technology is a good example. So we're very careful in adopting the new technology, that we don't do something that's going to be very expensive for our customers but doesn't work very well. So we're not an early adapter of the new technology. Renewables is a good example. But we integrate those into our system when we can, and we can do it proactively, but yet cost-effectively. So Black Hills, you know, the Black Hills region is a good example. We have roughly 5% wind in our system here. There's no mandate for us to do so, but we could get that much in and do it pretty economically. So, you know, we've navigated that as best we can, and we're continuing to look for those opportunities. Some of the states, in contrast, Colorado has a very aggressive mandate for energy supply. We follow that. We've done that. We've literally rebuilt the entire generation fleet for our Colorado electric utility in 7 years, the whole thing. Now we have a system that's 100% wind and natural gas fired generation. There's a few old peaking units there that run on diesel, but we never run them. But that's expensive for customers, right? They're paying for brand new generation fleet.
Wow.
And that's the tricky part, as you said, you know, basically navigating that challenge where we have to comply with the mandates. We have to do it as inexpensively as possible for customers. So there, when you've got a renewable mandate, we have to have 30% of our energy from renewable sources by 2020. You can do that two ways. You can run out and get it all done right away, or you can phase it in very slowly. Well, our customer base can't afford to have it done very quickly. We serve a relatively low-income area in southern Colorado. So we're adding our renewables there on essentially a just-in-time basis. So we meet the compliance deadlines, but we're not way ahead of them to try to prolong the lower rates as long as we can for customers.
And forgive me, is that renewable requirement for Colorado only, or is that a nationwide?
That's thing? Only Colorado only. That's a state mandate.
And that leads me to another question. What is the responsibility of a company like Black Hills Corp when it comes to the issue of climate change? What role should a company like yours play when it comes to dealing with that issue?
You know, the interesting dilemma for us as a utility is we really don't get to make that prudency decision, right? What's the best source of generation for our customers? The Public Utility Commission in each state gets to make that decision. So, for example, in Wyoming and South Dakota, if we went and proposed a bunch of wind additions and they meant more cost to customers, it's very likely we would get approval for those. And if we went in and recommended a very expensive zero-carbon generation technology experiment, for example, very unlikely we would get approval for those. So, you know, we don't really get to make the decision per se. So again, what we do is we do, you know, we do as much as we can, as soon as we can, in line with utility commissioners' expectations. So the Clean Power Plan's a great example, which of course it was just stayed last week by the Supreme Court, week before. That rule is very unique. First time for a rule that was proposed that way, in that rather than regulating emissions at the source, the individual power plant, it's essentially proposing to regulate an average emission rate for an entire state. And that's a big part of the legal challenge to the rule, because the Clean Air Act wasn't really written to anticipate regulating anything more than the source of the pollutant. Right? But anyway, under that rule, I mean, we've been doing a lot of work with the states on how we can comply, how we can best comply at the least cost for customers. And have done a lot of planning around that. And actually, our fleet's in really good shape. And we do have the four coal plants in Gillette, Wyoming, plus one that we're the joint operator and owner of, joint owner of, and another company operates. Those four plants are some of the cleanest coal-fired plants in the United States for all emissions other than CO2. And obviously, anything that burns fossil fuels is going to emit CO2. Unless it's got a new technology, you know, what I would still classify as in the experimental stage to scrub the CO2 right now.
I want to give you a chance to respond to critics out there who say we need to go to renewables faster. And those critics who say power companies like yours are slowing that process or stymieing that effort. So those who point to Germany, for example, who are now getting a large percentage of their renewables on some or energy from renewables on some day, they're saying right. This is possible. How do you react to those critics?
I think really the issue, again, is it comes down to cost for customers. So I'll use Colorado as an example. We installed a wind farm there a couple years ago to meet the deadline. For compliance, and after installing the wind farm, our total fuel cost for our utility and fuel consumption for our utility has actually gone up because we're having to run natural gas turbines at half speed, for example, to make up for fluctuations in the wind. And when you run engines at half speed instead of full speed, they actually burn more fuel per kilowatt or megawatt generated than they do if they run at their design rate, which is essentially wide open. So, you know, there's a lot of factors like that I think you have to consider when you make those decisions. And it really, what it boils down to is just straight out cost for customers. Our approach has always been, other than the mandates, do what we can do without driving large rate increases for customers. Now, the flip side of your question is, you know, they say a lot of power companies don't want to do it because, you know, we have old coal plants or something else. Well, the reality of it is the way a utility makes money, right, we only make money on the infrastructure that we build. We don't make a profit on expenses. We don't make a profit on fuel. We earn a return on top of what we spend for capital. So if you think about it in that perspective, we should tear every coal plant down that we have and replace it with something brand new and much more expensive, right? I mean, that's the profit motive. If we were doing that, we would have already, if we were worried only about the profit motive, we would have already put a ton of renewables in our system, because that's how we make money, is by building the wind farms or the power plants. But again, at the end of the day, it's up to the Utilities Commission to set the fair rates in your state. So, you know, the United States, I think, you know, it depends on where you're at, right, as to what states have done. There's no national mandate here for renewables. I think there's a continued adoption of them, and there's also a very aggressive tax policy that favors renewables, right? Wind earns a 2 cent a kilowatt hour tax credit, federal tax credit, which provides quite a bit of incentive, and that offsets some of that cost to customers directly. But we all indirectly pay for that.
There are those who out there who say we need to be much more aggressive, though, when it comes to going towards renewables. There are those who advocate even for a carbon tax. They say we're facing a situation with the climate right now where we're running out of the easy options, and we're going to have to start taking radical measures. I mean, when you think about the future, and I'm sure you've read climate change reports and know what's out there, what's your opinion are we going to be able to adapt fast enough?
I've read all of those things, and I would say the one thing that I keep coming back to when I look at it is what's the best thing to do for customers in that light. Any of the studies that you read that I would say are unbiased will say that even if we stop emitting CO2 today, it's going to take probably a century to have a meaningful impact on the mean temperature of the Earth, right? So under that scenario, do we have to do all of this in a 5-year period or a 10-year period, or can we do it in a 40-year period or a 50-year period that we can afford and we can innovate in order to meet the technological advancements that are going to be necessary to get there? And I guess I think the latter is a more sensible approach, much more economical, doesn't do the damage to the economy and the competitiveness of one country over another, for example, in a world manufacturing type market and things like that.
Well, Dave Emery, CEO of Black Hills Corp, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dave Emery sat down with SDPB's Charles Muckeray in the SDPB studios in Rapid City.